Multiple adapters and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey solar charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, the system automatically begins charging its own rechargeable batteries. Get the incredible Berkey solar charger for only...
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And, well, for this next hour, hopefully they're going to be the views of Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and we're going to be talking about these various techniques that they're developing to identify and track the individual. It was just last month when Catherine was on with us, and she was talking about this GPS concept of tagging every door, every home in the United States. And, of course, this came as quite a shock to me to realize that the people from the census were doing the census, it seems, early this year for some reason, or daily I would anticipate it would be next year, but right now they're going out all across America and they're getting a GPS localizer on every home. But what Catherine had brought out last month was this is not just in the United States. This is a worldwide program, and if we're talking about people with aluminum roofed houses in South America and thatched roof houses in Africa and every cave and every place where people are living, they're getting GPS coordinates on them. Why would they do that? Well, it should be obvious if you listen to our programs. There is a move towards a one-world government. They want to know where everybody is so they can track everybody. And with the computers that they have today, the NSA computers, which incidentally do run the Internet. The Internet is something, not something nebulous up there. The Internet certainly is run through our intelligence agencies, another means by which they can track everything that's said and done in America. Catherine, thank you so very much for being with us. How are you this afternoon?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm doing great. Definitely there's a lot in the news, though, that I think we should be paying attention to.
Well, that's why I asked you to be with us once a month, so please bring us up to date with what the things are going. Things are moving so rapidly, the average American has no idea. Well, we're going to teach them, and I know you have your own radio program, but you go ahead. What is there really significant in the news today?
Well, I got to say the one report that got my attention is that in Great Britain they are looking to the Chinese for security, and that always worries me. You know, we just had the 20th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre over in China, and so if anything should serve as a bleak and stark reminder of what happens when governments become excessively powerful and oppressive, that should certainly be that reminder. And China is no better off now than they were then. In fact, in many ways they're worse off, because the surveillance and control infrastructure of that government over the people of China has simply grown more powerful and stronger in those couple of decades. Well, China, of course, was in the spotlight last summer because they hosted the Summer Olympics in Beijing. And there were many security measures put in place because, of course, the Olympics, they like to scare us and make it think it's going to be a big terrorist target, and everyone needs to be, you know, extremely on high alert when the Olympics come to town. What is extremely disturbing, though, is that the Great Britain actually sent a member of Scotland Yard, one of their police researchers or one of their police officials, over to China because London will be hosting the 2012 Olympics, and they look to China to see what kind of security they can put in place. And, yeah, wait till you hear what China had been doing and now England is considering doing. It is mind-blowing.
Well, what are they considering doing?
Well, you've got China, actually, it turns out during the Olympics, they placed tiny microphones, wireless bugs, in all of the cabs. and they listened in on people's conversations as they drove around Beijing in the backseat of cabs. Those conversations were routed to a police control center, and the police had the power, if they heard something they didn't like in one of those conversations, to use remote equipment to simply shut down the cabs.
We're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. Catherine Albeck right here at Radio Liberty. Well, you know, really, the electronics we have today is such a two-edged sword. I mean, it's wonderful. Internet radio is wonderful. The information there is wonderful. But the electronic devices and means of monitoring that are developing because of this electronic age really is almost beyond comprehension.
Well, it is. And you've got, I mean, you know, as we were discussing here just before the break, you've got China deploying these bugs in the cars. And the only reason we know about this, China didn't exactly come out and tell anybody. None of the passengers in the cabs became aware of the bugs. To the best of my knowledge, even the cab drivers didn't know that their own vehicles were bugs, so their conversations were being listened in on as well. But the really disturbing piece of this is how we came to know about it. And that's because a 40-plus page document was leaked to the press. This is a document that came out of Scotland Yard regarding preparation for the 2012 Olympics in London, and they are looking to use some of the same tactics and strategies and techniques that communist Big Brother, Soviet China, essentially, communist China, is using right now against its own citizens. So when you've got London looking into this, when you've got the UK and Scotland Yard looking into these tactics, then you need to look very closely at what else we're going to be borrowing from China, which is, you know, obviously one of the most repressive police states there is. Now, one of the other things that came out in this report ties in directly to my research, and this has to do with RFID, or radio frequency ID microchips. Back before the Beijing Olympics, one of the big contracts that went to one of these companies, these RFID companies, was to place an RFID microchip, a radio frequency transmittable chip, into all of the Olympic tickets. So the ticket that you'd use to actually get into the Olympics, those were all spy chipped. They were all tagged with RFID. It turns out in this report that just got leaked out of England that the Chinese government took advantage of exactly what we said they would do and used those chips in those tickets to track journalists, to track regular tourists, you know, people who had flown there from other parts of the world to observe the Olympics, and even the athletes themselves, we believe, because of this report, were tracked through the RFID tags in their tickets. Now, one final piece, just to kind of complete the picture of total surveillance and what I believe is in our future unless we stand up and fight back, is in China, they have 300,000 CCTV cameras in Beijing alone. 300,000 cameras.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and we're talking about these techniques of surveillance. He was just commenting how certainly in China during the Olympics, the reporters, the athletes, everybody had tickets to get in and out, identification tags, things of that sort, but they had RFID tickets in them, RFID chips, so they could actually track them, how effective it was, of course, to have microphones in all of the taxis there so they could listen to conversations in Beijing when people were coming. The technology that is available now for surveillance is amazing. Certainly, if there's something like 300,000 or more of cameras there in Beijing, but we're posting them all over America. Have you ever noticed on television, they always show you how, oh, isn't it wonderful we've got these cameras in the, say, in the 7-Eleven stores now. We can see the hold-ups. We recently noted that they have them in hotel lobbies, and they were used to catch a bad guy who is responsible for murdering a woman. But they have all of these surveillance videos, and they're not necessarily simply for catching the bad guys. These would be used to watch what the good people are doing and to track them. And, of course, now with a miracle of facial recognition, and, of course, they have collected the pictures from our driver's license, and those are all there. And with facial recognition now, it's very easy to look at a picture on the video and tell it's you. How did they get your picture? Why, they weren't supposed to have it, but they're collecting it, but they don't want you to know. And we are putting in those video cameras in America, just like they're doing in communist China, because the ultimate goal is the same: surveillance of everyone, everybody under control, everybody being watched. Go right ahead, Catherine.
Well, yeah, and when you take a look at the bigger picture, we know that the Department of Homeland Security, there are federal grants now to the tune of billions of dollars, we believe, that are going out to all of the communities across America to fund the installation of these CCTV cameras, just like they have in Beijing. And what we know from this leaked report out of England, again from the Scotland Yard, detailing what the British are learning from the Chinese about their surveillance systems that are going in place in Chinese cities, we know that those 300,000 closed-circuit television cameras, those surveillance cameras installed in Beijing, have biometric software linked up to them. So they can identify people walking down the street. They can compare them with a list of people they're looking for, maybe political dissidents. You know, in China, you can get in big trouble and be practically thrown into their equivalent of a gulag if they don't like what you write on your blog. So, you know, there's definitely a political undercurrent in China because, as someone said in the aftermath of the Tiananmen Square revolts and the massacre that followed, they said, where there is repression, there will be revolt. And I thought that was a very apt and accurate statement. So the more the government represses the Chinese people, the more the government becomes oppressive to the Chinese people, the more there will be an underground wanting to fight back and overthrow that government, as well it should be. And you get into kind of an arms race, in a way, because you've got now that the more oppressive the government becomes, then the more people want to oppose it. And eventually you get to the point where, in order to prevent that kind of unrest, the government has to resort to really brutal and violent tactics. Now, we've seen it happen all throughout history. We've seen it happen all over the globe. And I think this new twist is that now this age-old pattern where governments become corrupt, people become aware of the corruption and try to fight back against the government then calls those people a threat to the established order and then tries to crack down on them, and then those people feel oppressed and then become, you know, their numbers grow as more and more regular members of society begin to feel oppressed. And eventually the whole system begins to unravel and crumble. Well, in China, they've got this new twist, which is the technology. So now, as the system begins unraveling and crumbling, and there are a lot of very unhappy people in China right now over their government and its policies, that's why they're stepping up the surveillance and the surveillance rhetoric. And I'm sure for China, it was a fabulous excuse to be able to say, hey, listen, this is all about the Olympics. But the reality is those 300,000 closed-circuit television cameras in Beijing are still there, and all the RFID readers they installed are still there, and I bet you those microphones in the cabs are still there, and now they're being used to spy on the Chinese citizens, the law-abiding, lawful Chinese citizens who are disgruntled about their government.
Well, I'm sure, of course, that they're checking the Internet as well to determine that, you know, there might be a dissident out there, who they are. You know, you mentioned 20 years from Tiananmen Square. People have forgotten Tiananmen Square and the brutal repression that followed that in China. And what did the United States do at that point in response to this tyranny? Well, of course, George Herbert Walker Bush was the president of the United States. And to punish China, we gave them the most favored nation treaty status so that they could trade readily with America without any restrictions. Why would we give most favored nation treaty status to communist China after the most brutal repression in modern times? And of course, you have to understand the people who really control our government, people like George Herbert Walker Bush and his son and Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, they all are part of this move towards the world government. And we are doing everything we can to build up this repressive regime. These miraculous things we see in China are these wonderful cities, you know, with the skyscrapers. Those are all built built with American money, American banker money, money that came from the East Asia Development Bank and the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. And America and certainly our allies in Europe should not be ignored. They're part of the parcel of this, Great Britain. We have built up this terribly tyrannical and oppressive regime. And we have to ask yourself, why would moral people do that? And the answer is, we do not have moral people in the leadership's position in our government. Go right ahead, Catherine.
Well, that's exactly right. We don't have moral people in those positions. And you said something else earlier that really struck home, and that's that people have forgotten about that massacre 20 years on. You know, we all have that image of that one courageous young man standing in front of the tank, and of course the tank stopping. And it really, I think the reason that image emblazoned itself in all of our consciousness is because that is really how we feel. You know, can one person stand up against an onslaught, against an army, against a tank? And even though that's the image that stood in our heads, was that the tank actually stopped and did not run down and smash this young man under the tread of the tank. What few people remember now is that what happened instead was the army, the Chinese army, actually came in and began firing on thousands of people who had gathered to protest that corrupt and oppressive regime. And what has later emerged is that when they fired on those people, and some estimates now believe that several thousand people may have been killed in Tiananmen Square in the massacre that followed it, but the government of China used hollow point bullets on those people who had not, most of them were unarmed. I believe all of them were unarmed, because in China you can't carry a gun. So these were unarmed civilians who had simply gathered in what initially had begun as a peaceful protest to call on their government to change its evil ways. And the army came out and literally began firing on their fellow citizens with hollow point bullets. And your listeners may not be familiar with what a hollow point bullet is or what it does. They've been banned internationally because they are considered to be, something that no civilized nation should use. So you can't use them in warfare. But China used them on their own people. And the reason a hollow point bullet is so horrifying is because if you envision a bullet coming out of a gun, and the tip of it is hollow and made of a softish metal, when it hits resistance, it will flatten out. But the momentum from the rest of the bullet, you know, its forward thrust will continue. So what you get is essentially something that looks a lot like a mushroom. So instead of being a projectile that goes in like a dart, it becomes a thing that blasts through a body that's thick and wide like a mushroom. And so they've actually got some pictures. There's a website online. It is let me see if I've got it right here. It is a photo essay of the massacre, very disturbing. It's online at the epochtimes.com, epochtimes.com. And I'll post a link to it at katherinealbrecht.com at the bottom of the homepage after our show today. But that's where the quote comes from: where there is repression, there will be revolt. Well, one of the photographs in there, I mean, they show young men whose legs were essentially destroyed as they were run over by tanks. They show people who were shot. They show the blood that was in the streets. And in one of the very disturbing photographs, they show the back of a person who was killed by one of these bullets, with a hole in his back that is probably 4 inches wide by 2 inches high, created by a single bullet. So that's the kind of thing we need to understand. This is the nation that we've given most favored trading status to. This is the nation that we have essentially allowed to plunder us of our wealth, as we've sent over all of our manufacturing jobs over to its shores. China is the nation that we've sent all of our cash to as well, because as we bought all of that cheap plastic junk from the Walmart stores, and Walmart, I believe, is like the biggest market for exported Chinese goods on the globe. I'd have to double-check that, but I believe that to be the case.
Actually, they actually have factories over there in China where Walmart owns the factories where they manufacture the goods they bring back here. So it's really a wonderful situation.
So should people not be understanding that the reason why we have no jobs in the U.S., why we have an unemployment rate pushing 10% now, is because we have sent the jobs, the money, our resources, everything over to China, which is one of the most repressive, oppressive, and violent nations on the planet.
And, of course, the thing that nobody wants to talk about is the fact that we've already given General Motors $20 billion. We're going to give them another $30 billion and perhaps much more. And China, of course, General Motors is opening their plants, expanding their plants in China. They have 8 auto manufacturing plants in China. They've already announced that they're going to be closing down their factories here, and they're going to start increasing their imports of GM cars made in communist China. Why are we giving money to General Motors? It's making lots of money in China and in Russia and Brazil and South America, and it's simply the transfer of America's wealth to foreign countries, specifically to one of the most tyrannical countries ever recorded. Well, you go right ahead.
Well, you know, the next time you buy something, and I'm referring here to our listeners, the next time you buy something, you need to ask yourself what the real cost is of what you're buying, because the reason we've all been buying Chinese goods is because they're cheap. They're inexpensive. They're also cheaply made in many cases, and in some cases, as we've learned the hard way, they're also dangerous. The melamine scare, where the Chinese in their sort of relentless pursuit of our money were caught, not just our money, but the money even of their fellow citizens, were caught putting essentially poison into baby formula. I mean, horrifying. Painting children's toys with lead paint. We've got all of those costs. But then there's another, I think, even more important cost, that when you look at let's say it's a bike that you want to buy, and it's $100, and if you wanted to buy an American bike, it'd be $200. You've got to ask yourself what additional price, cost is being, are we not counting when we say, gee, I'm saving all this money? You've got to look. That's about job loss. That's about our money going over to empower China, which is got an enormous military, very threatening to its neighbors, very threatening to the folks of Hong Kong and the folks of Tibet. They can tell us firsthand exactly what it's like being threatened by China. And ultimately, I believe that the Chinese, once they have plundered us of all of our wealth, then they're going to turn on us. I mean, I don't think culturally that we are a good match with China. Clearly, we have a very different political system. We have a very different set of beliefs as to what the value of a human life is and as to what the role of people in relation to government is. And you've got to bear in mind, that's the biggest nation on Earth. They've got, I believe, the biggest military on Earth. Maybe not the most powerful, but we may be slipping. We're spreading ourselves really thin. And, they're, I believe, a very ruthless people. Anyone who would shoot their own citizens, it just fire into a crowd blindly with hollow point bullets in violation of international law is a brutal, ruthless, dangerous, violent government. Now, I want to make sure that we don't wind up with a government like that here. I think that's where people really need to be waking up. And, the same way the Chinese people, I betcha that if they had the freedoms that we have to speak out, to picket, to protest, to get involved, to do things, they'd probably give their right arm for the ability to have even a fraction of the freedom that we have to stand up and oppose our government. And yet so many people, even listening to this program, they argue, they complain inside their own heads, but who's standing out there with a picket sign? Who's actually going out there to make their feelings known? Who is monkey wrenching the system? Not a lot of people.
Well, of course, the real problem is today that so many people honestly believe that there's a threat of terrorism. We're constantly told about all these terrorist cells here in the United States plan to blow up the Sears building or bring down airplanes and buying surface air missiles.
Let me challenge you and your listeners on that count. I know you don't believe this, but I'm going to put the challenge out there anyway. What is it that the terrorists might do to us? All right, let's really look at that. Let's look at it straight on. So let's say there are tons of terrorists out there. What might they do? Might they take away our freedoms?
Exactly.
Right. What might the terrorists do? Might the terrorists strip away our Constitution and replace it with something evil and repressive? Might the terrorists, that's really the question. Who are we to be fearing right now? Some nebulous terrorists who might do those things, or an actual government that is currently doing those
things? Hold that thought. We'll be right back in a moment.
Well, this is Darkness
Stan. And Catherine was just pointing out that this, we hear all about the threat of terrorism here in the United States, that these terrorists want to take away our freedom and they want to transform our society into something different and oppressive. And yet it is our own government that is actually doing exactly that in the name of fighting these wicked terrorists who are going to take away our freedom. And yet if you analyze literally every one of the terrorists who's been sent to prison here in the United States, I'd say at least 80% of them, every one of them was incited to join the terrorist movement because there was an FBI informant. In fact, this latest one where they were buying the surface-to-air missiles, who was buying the surface-to-air missiles? Why, the FBI.
Right.
The FBI put up the money to buy these missiles, to buy the weapons, and of course, the fellow went into the mosque, he was a Muslim, and he recruited some people who weren't very, very smart, and he played upon them, and he offered them a lot of money if they'd join in his terrorist activities. And the one thing I would criticize these people for is being very, very stupid. Most of the people in the mosque knew he was a government agent, and these people refused to believe it. They were greedy, but there was no terrorist threat. The government had created that, and literally every one of the so-called terrorist activities in the United States was financed with your tax money, ladies and gentlemen, including the group, of course, that attacked the World Trade Center in 1993, but nobody ever talks about that. The man who was supposed to build the bomb was a man named Salem, who was actually an FBI informant. In fact, he wanted to build a bomb with powder that wouldn't explode, so there'd be no explosion in 1993, and the FBI wouldn't let him. Anybody doubts that? We've got a clipping out of the New York Times many years ago that actually tells that incredible story, and when we contacted the author of the story and asked him about it, he said, "I can't talk about it. I'm not allowed to talk about it." You go right ahead, Catherine.
Wow. Well, what I had been saying before the break was this. I think as a nation, we need to really, if we're going to have this whole conversation about terrorism and how it's going to destroy our country, then what I would really be very interested in knowing, what is it the terrorists might do? Do you think that terrorists destroy the automotive industry, the automobile industry, and take away thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of jobs and leave entire segments of the U.S. Of the U.S. landscape devastated, jobless, people losing their homes?
Don't forget closing down between 2,000 and 2,500 distributorships, which is going to put 100,000 people out of work.
There you go.
Why not if they weren't profitable, they would have closed down long ago. Obviously, they're profitable. Why did the Obama administration want to put another 100,000 Americans out of work? Nobody asked that question. Why are we giving General Motors money so that they can close down the factories here and then open them up over in communist China, where they are the second largest automotive manufacturer in communist China today? Nobody ever asked that. Go ahead.
Well, and that's exactly, if people would just look at the devastation being wrought right now by the quote-unquote accepted powers that be, by the government, by the corporations, by the fascist connection between the governments and the corporations, by the revolving door regulatory agencies, which are staffed at the highest levels by cronies from within the industries they're supposed to regulate. If people would just look at the devastation that has been wrought by those folks, they would realize that they are a clear, present, not just a threat, a clear and present devastating force destroying this country right now, right underneath our noses. And those very people are pointing to a nebulous potential future threat that is certainly not materializing, saying that we have to give them even more power to even further destroy our nation, undermine our economy, devastate our currency, devastate the job situation. You know, you can go on and on and on, and ultimately, as you put it, change our way of life, destroy our constitution, eliminate our rights and our freedoms. So we can look there and say, these people are doing it right now. Why are we so scared of somebody down the road potentially doing it? Why aren't we turning around and looking at the people who are actually doing it? You know, I was in Detroit recently, and I was talking to my good friend Pastor Steve Upshur from Peacemakers Ministry. They do wonderful work there, feeding and taking care of drug addicts on the meanest streets of Detroit. Just wonderful people there. And they were telling me that the stores have no, that he was talking to somebody at a Target store, and she said nobody's buying anything anymore, that the store is being devastated, they're laying off workers, they don't have enough even shoppers to justify the employees. So again, you know, you're looking at that, so what if a terrorist dropped a bomb in a Target store? Is that much different from destroying all of these retail outlets all around the country too?
Well, we've got a real problem in America. We've got to get the American people to understand that reality is usually scoffed at, but illusion is usually king. And, of course, the threat of terrorism, a takeaway of freedom, is certainly nowhere near the threat of the people in the positions of power in our government who are financing, of course, this movement throughout the world on one hand, and then, of course, telling us they're going to save us from the wicked terrorists with the other. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. I guess Catherine Albrecht, go right ahead, Catherine.
No, I'm just I get so emotional sometimes thinking about what it is that we're allowing to happen to our country, and I think sometimes we forget that there is an answer, you know, to those feelings, to those emotions of feeling overwhelmed and a little bit stressed. And to me, that answer is prayer. That answer is faith. I think that if we can get back to a centered place of realizing we cannot control the actions of others. We can play a role, but we cannot control the outcome of history or the destiny of our nation and what direction things are going. We certainly need to pitch in. We need to play a role. We need to be involved. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the only thing that we really have control over is ourselves and our own morality, our own integrity. And at the end of the day, and at the end of our lives, there's really going to be just one thing you can say you were in charge of and you had control over, and that's yourself. And so I think in many cases, we need to be looking very closely at our own behavior, very closely at the jobs that we're willing to take. So many jobs right now in this tough economy, they're surveillance jobs, they're military contracting jobs, creating weapons, creating surveillance drones, creating you know, technology that can be used to more efficiently spy on us and our neighbors. And, you know, I look at people taking those jobs and I say, if we all had a little more faith, I think if we all got on our knees a little bit more, I think if we asked for guidance and a way out of all of this darkness, I think that we would have a much clearer path before us, individually and collectively as a nation.
Well, I certainly would second exactly what you're saying, because as we've said so often, it's really a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. But, of course, people have to understand what this is about. And, of course, one reason I do what I do is hoping, of course, when people begin to realize, of course, the very real danger that we face, and that suddenly this wonderful country we've lived in, the country we've known and loved, really doesn't exist anymore. And the good times that we've had in the past are not coming back. America is not going to come back the same when we get through this current economic crisis. We'll either end up with a fascist society, or we'll end up with a society that is much poorer and where there's not the prosperity, but we will have freedom. But the important thing, I hope that people, when they realize what's going on, will begin looking for an answer. And they won't find it in politics. They will find it within the pages of the Holy Scriptures.
Absolutely. Well,
hang on. We'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Catherine Albrecht right here at the Radio Liberty Network. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Catherine Albrecht. And before we go on, Catherine, would you like to get your web page out and tell people how to get in touch with your ministry and how to listen to your radio programs?
Indeed, I would, yeah. I broadcast on the Genesis Communications Network, where, of course, your program can also be heard, Dr. Stan. People can hear my show Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, or 1 to 3 Pacific, and you can do the math from there. Monday through Friday every day. You can listen, if you're not lucky enough to catch it on your local radio dial, you can go to gcnlive.com, click the Listen Live button in the upper right-hand corner of the GCN page, and then navigate your way to my show, which is on Channel 2. If you miss that, you can always go to my website, or if you didn't have time to write that down or don't remember, if you can remember my name, it's Catherine Albrecht. You can go to CatherineAlbrecht.com. And I think even if you misspell it, when you type it into a search engine, it'll still come up. So you can still find me, KatherineAlbrich.com, and I've got information on how you can listen to the radio show there. I've also got links to the archives. My show's been on the air now for a little over 2 years, so you've got literally hundreds of programs that you can choose from. They're searchable, so you can go back and find a particular topic that I've discussed. And I talk about everything from raw milk to the dangers of eating soy products to RFID tags and driver's licenses to Big Brother government to political issues involving Obama, history. There's a whole host of different topics that I cover, and all of those are available there at the website. The other thing I want to let people know, now is the time, if you have not yet done so, to get a copy of the book Spy Chips. And this is the best-selling, award-winning book on RFID. It is the definitive book, and in fact, it's the only book that has been written that describes in detail what the risks are, how the technology works, how it's being used, and how you can protect yourself. And that book is available on my website, spychips.com, or people can just drop me an email, kma@spychips.com. That's my initials, K, M as in Mary, A, at spychips.com. And you can get a copy of that hardback book for $25 and $5 shipping and handling, and I'll even personally sign it, and I'll even address the envelope, because I will be the person putting it in the mail to you if you do that. So, now the other thing I have to mention, Dr. Stan, you and I have had many conversations about the spiritual nature of the battle that's going on, and I have a children's book coming out at Christmas time titled I Will Not Take the Mark. I Won't Take the Mark. It's for kids age 4 to 7. And it is a, I'm so excited about this book, I can't even tell you. I've got the most talented and brilliant artist probably in the world. I just think this woman is amazing. Her name is Julia Pearson. And if people want to check out her work now, they can go to juliapearsonart.com. And it's P-E-A-R, like a pear, pearsonart.com. She's illustrating the book right now as we speak. And the thing I love about this book, it has two features that I think make it special. It is for kids age 4 to 7, so the language is very simple. But on each page, there's a separate little box on the left, a nice tall vertical box, where I put the actual biblical scripture. So adults can learn as they read why it is that I can talk about the mark of the beast, or I can talk about the vision that John, the Apostle John, had 2,000 years ago in which he was shown this vision. I talk about the promises that the Bible gives to us, that those who resist the mark of the beast and who are beheaded for the testimony of Christ in that horrible time that is to come, that they will live and reign with Christ for 1,000 years. I've got the biblical references for all of that. And then the very simple and positive message for the young people as well. And then at the end of the book, what I've done is I've created a certificate. That there's two of them. One stays in the book, and one of them can be removed and framed in an 8x10 frame. And what it says is the young person actually says, I promise to worship only God, because, you know, as you and I both know, the culmination of all of this is that the beast, the incarnation of Satan, is going to embody himself on this planet and demand worship of the world's people. He will demand that they worship him and that they take his mark and his number. So at that time, people who have not been warned, who haven't been inoculated by the messages in the Bible, who haven't been cautioned, they will believe that he is all-powerful and that he's going to solve all their problems, and they'll get down on their knees, and they're going to worship. And, you know, as we know from the Old Testament, as we know from, you know, clearly in the Bible, if there's one thing God absolutely will not tolerate, it's having us worship false gods. And if there's ever been a false god, it's certainly going to be the beast of the end time. He's a monster. He blasphemes against God, and he's out for blood. He wants to destroy us. He wants our souls. So the certificate at the end of the book is the child's promise that they will not worship anyone but God, that they will call on Jesus Christ to help them keep their promise, and that they will never take the beast mark on their right hand or their forehead. So you've got little children, age 4, 5, 6, 7, reading this with grandma, with an aunt, with dad, with grandpa, uncle, whoever might be reading, a Sunday school teacher. And when they're done reading the book, then the parent asks them, will you make this promise? And the reason this is so beautiful for me is that's the promise my own grandmother had me make at the age of 8 in her kitchen in a little farmhouse in the Midwest. And I firmly, and to this moment, remember making that promise as a little girl to my grandmother. And it is that one promise made in that little kitchen that has brought me all the places that I am today fighting against this technology.
Well, you know, it's amazing, but, you know, if people had told you 40 years ago that we would today be living in a situation where they could actually bring about a cashless society, where there was the capacity to track everyone and to actually be able to inject some sort of a chip or something, we don't know what it's going to be, but you would say that this really couldn't be true, and yet these things were prophesied, you know, 2,000 years ago. We live in the most exciting times when you know the Lord. If you don't know Him, why, of course, you're going to be totally confused by everything going on, and yet everything is following a preconceived notion, preconceived plan.
And well, and that's exactly right. And people who doubt it need only look at the fact that Israel is now a nation again after, you know, how many centuries of not having that prophecy you know, come to pass. We know that that prophecy was meant to come to pass in those end times. We can look at the technology, and I frequently have said that we are the first generation to actually see the potential to fulfill the mark of the beast, where you can pay, you can buy and sell with a number anywhere on the globe today. You can buy and sell with a number, a credit card, using a satellite phone at the top of Mount Kilimanjaro or Mount Fuji, or out in the middle of the Antarctic. You can make a payment with a numbered credit card. We are now to the point where we have mapped every inch of the globe. We have identified all of the people living on the globe. That's a very new thing. And we're almost to the point where the other part of biblical, you know, what Jesus told us is that these things will come to pass when the gospel has been preached to all of the world's people. And that also is on the point of coming to fruition, where there will soon be a time when everybody on this globe has access to cable television and internet TV and all these other things, and they will all receive that message of Jesus Christ. They may not believe it, but they will have all heard it. And at the moment, I believe that every single person, the very last person on this earth, has heard that message. Then that's when God's going to say, okay, they've all been told. There's not a single soul on this earth who has not been told, and whose soul has not been called, to whom the truth has not attempted to leap out and touch them with love. And at that moment, so it's kind of a, you know, I talk often about an arms race between the privacy and the freedom people and the government. Well, there's also sort of a similar race happening right now between God and Satan. And we're told in the Bible that Satan is going, you know, he realizes he has a very short time once these things begin happening, so he's going to step up the volume. That's why you see young people walking around with skulls across their shirts. That's why you see this overt evil in the video games. That's why you can turn on the television, and it is rife with corruption and filth and sin and violence and ugliness. That's why parents and children are turning against each other, and the love of people is growing cold. So all of those things that were told to us in the Bible, they're happening because Satan is upping the pace. He is turning on the accelerator because he realizes the time is drawing near. So on both sides, and what I really think is going to be happening with us, because we're sort of the human players in this whole drama, is we are going to be called to take sides. I really believe that's what's going to happen with us. We are going to be called, and people are pretty wishy-washy. You know, usually most people don't want to really side with anything ever. But you're going to start seeing a real parting between people. You know, Christ said, I came not to bring peace but a sword. And what he's talking about is coming to bring division among people, to divide. And, you know, the Bible's very clear. There's going to be the vineyard and the fruit the vine that's actually bearing fruit. And then there's going to be the ones that are not. And that's the distinction. You're going to see people, and I'm already starting to see it now, people who are almost obsessively, fanatically in favor of these horrible technologies, who seem as though they're blind, like you could wave your hand in front of their faces, and it's like they can't see because they're so fixated on what's going to happen when we merge with machines, when we can download our consciousness into video games or into virtual reality, when we no longer even need these packages of meat called our bodies. You know, that's the place that those people look forward to. You know, I look at that and I'm horrified. I love God's green earth. I love the fact that He gave me, you know, this miraculous and incredible body to live in that functions so beautifully and can smell and hear and taste and see. You know, I don't want to get rid of that, but there are people out there who want that. And so you're going to see, like, even Richard Dawkins, the guy who is so opposed to God, you know, he claims he's just an atheist, but he's anti-God. He's not just neutral about God. You know, those kinds of people are going to become more vocal. We're going to start hearing about them more and more. And and people like me who for many decades, you know, I was quiet about my faith. I didn't want to embarrass myself or have people go, she's one of those, you know, Bible-pounding Christian nutcases. I didn't want to be perceived that way. You know, I've got a Harvard doctorate. I've got a professional career. And yet people like me are going to be called, because I've been very directly called, come out and speak openly about your faith because the time is now. So all of your listeners, too, you know, they're going to start feeling this. If they're not feeling it now, all of you are going to start feeling that calling. You're going to be pulled. Speak out. Speak openly because there's not much time left. So that's what I perceive happening on the human spiritual sphere of this as these things begin happening and the pot, you know, the heat under the pot is really being turned up to boiling.
Well, you're absolutely right. And this last weekend, I went to something called the Conspiracy Conference. And I go to this conference. I mean, there are mediums there. There are channelers there. There are all sorts of people who talk about the conspiracy. They really don't understand it. I go because there has to be a Christian voice, and I had the opportunity to give the keynote speech there. But, of course, at the end, after 2 days, there are about 400 people there. Well, we have this panel, and all the people there from the various speakers, about 12 of them. One of them, of course, was talking about all the evidence of the animals on Mars, and they knew that the government's covering up the fact that there really is life on Mars and animals up there. I mean, pretty far out. But, you know, of course, during the panel, why, of course, people knew that I was a Christian. I professed my belief. Somebody asked me the difference between Luciferianism and Satanism, and I told them it was the distinction without a difference. But after about 2 hours, we got to the end of the line, and this fellow had been standing there for about an hour waiting for the last question, and everybody's getting ready to leave. And this young man comes to the microphone, and he says, well, I want to address this question to Dr. Monteith. Have you ever considered that you are simply worshiping the wrong God? I mean, look at this world. Look how terrible things are. Look at the wars and the revolution and the famine and the suffering. And you worship the God, you know, that created all of this. Have you ever stopped to think that perhaps Lucifer is the good God? So, I mean, how are you going to respond to that? And, you know, I looked at him and I said, well, you know, I think that is probably the most important question that's been brought up during this whole entire conference. And I'm so glad you brought it up, because I want the people here in this audience to really understand there are literally millions of people in the United States and throughout the world that worship Lucifer as you do. And I'm just so glad. I think it's so important that you can worship him if you want to, but for me and my family, we'll worship on the Lord. And this poor guy just literally ran out of the room. But I think it's so difficult for people to really understand that the Gnostic heresy is prevalent in America today. It's alive and well, and there really are people who worship Lucifer, and some of them are working at the highest levels of our government today.
Well, can I address that very directly?
Go right ahead.
I just have a quote while you were speaking. There's a guy named Saul Alinsky who wrote the book Rules for Radicals.
Right.
He was actually a mentor to Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Hillary Clinton and Obama as well. He's got sort of a relationship with both of them. Radical activist in the 1960s and 70s, this guy Saul Alinsky. Well, the reason I'm bringing him up, I'm about to read a quote that he used to open his book, in which he essentially dedicated his book to Lucifer, and I'll read the quote. It's quite chilling. But there's a separate piece that I want to bring in as context for this. There is, I believe, a satanic attempt to influence the freedom movement into a place of anger and hatred and violence. Because we all know there is so much wrong in this country right now. There are so many people who probably rightly deserve to be imprisoned and maybe even receive the death sentence for destroying our country. But it is not our place to do that. And there is nothing that Satan would like more than to take our righteous indignation and our righteous outrage and our appropriate anger and frustration with these people and turn it to evil satanic ends. So we need to all be very much on our guard as we enter into these tough and turbulent times, to not allow hatred to consume us and to not allow our solution to evil to be evil in itself. Because if you're trying to solve evil and you do it by throwing more evil out into the world, then all that has really happened is you've just increased the amount of evil and you've let Satan win. So, you know, the big headline today, of course, is that this gunman went in and killed a guard at the Holocaust Museum. And, of course, the media is having a field day. He was a 9/11 truther. He was a white supremacist. He was this. He was that. And I'm sure they're going to try to tie him in with the freedom movement in some way and try to paint us with a dark brush. But the reality is that that man, regardless of what he thought he was doing, and I'm sure on some level he thought he was doing a good thing, I don't know, in his deluded state, but he essentially added an immense quantity of evil into the world. So we need to be on our guard and be very careful. And the reason I mention this, my husband almost bought me this book, Rules for Radicals, because I'm an activist, and he had all kinds of tips for how you can be a more effective activist and bring about social change. And he found the book because my last name, Albrecht, A-L-B, what my book, Spy Chips, was housed on the shelves in bookstores right next to Alinsky, A-L-I, right? So there's Albrecht and Alinsky, and my husband's looking where my book is. He sees Saul Alinsky. He goes, oh, Rules for Radicals. He pulls it off the shelf. And as he opens it, he reads the dedication at the beginning, and he said he almost dropped the book. Do I have time to read it?
You go right ahead.
Lest we forget, at least an over-the-shoulder acknowledgement to the very first radical. From all our legends, mythology, and history, and who is to know where mythology leaves off and history begins, or which is which, to the first radical known to man who rebelled against the establishment and did it so effectively that he at least won his own kingdom, Lucifer.
And that's what the battle is all about today, ladies and gentlemen. There really are Luciferian people who would destroy God's wonderful society, wonderful earth, wonderful promise. There's a battle between good and evil. Which side will you choose? We'll be right back. Yes, that really is a chilling quotation. In fact, I got the book. I just wanted to actually hold it in my hand. Of course, I bought a second-hand copy. I wouldn't want Alinsky or any of his relatives to get a royalty on it, but they are available on Amazon. And there's a lot of truth in what he has to say, but of course, his whole rebelling against the injustice we see in this society, using the techniques that he is using, actually simply pushes the very philosophy of the people that he would oppose. What most people do not understand is that so much of the radical movement and the revolutionary movement and the communist movement in this country is being financed by the very forces that we oppose. And I mean, I'm speaking now of the people of great wealth who want this unrest, who want this violence, who want this state of chaos. And they always want a controlled opposition, and they sure do control it very effectively.
Yes,
well, we've got
do.
About 2 minutes for you to wrap up the program, Catherine.
Well, I'd like to conclude. I'd like to invite your listeners to listen to my radio program, to drop me an email, kma@spychips.com. I would love to hear from your listeners because I know that we have a similar worldview. And I would encourage them to become informed about the technologies that are being used to implement all of this. So please get a copy, if you have not done so already, of my book, Spy Chips. If you cannot afford $30 to order a copy, because I know times are tough for a lot of people, on our website at spychips.com, there is a link where you can find it at a local library. So you can just type in your zip code, and it will tell you where the nearest copy to you is. So if finances are an issue, it's not your money I want. It's your mind. I want you to know this information and be informed. The final thing I want to point out, just about Saul Alinsky and his Rules for Radicals, one thing he says as a strategy, he says, ridicule is man's most potent weapon. It infuriates the opposition, who then react to your advantage. That may as well be Satan speaking himself. He knows that you, right now, are afraid to speak out and say the name of Jesus Christ in polite company. He knows that you're afraid to stand up and speak openly about being a Christian and about your beliefs about the times we're living in, because you will be ridiculed. And I'll tell you, the hardest thing I ever did, Dr. Stan, was overcoming that fear and going through probably 3 months of sobbing my guts out over losing what I thought were friends, over having people literally at meetings turn their back to me and walk away and call me names. Being ridiculed openly in the New York Times. It was one of the toughest things I ever went through. I cried, and I thought my heart would break, and I said, God, why are you doing this to me? Why are you letting this happen? My life is being ruined because I'm speaking out for you. And when I came out on the other end of that, I'll tell you, I was 1,000 times stronger and so much more courageous and so much more on fire.
Hold that thought. We're just going to have to take a quick break here. And well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's been Dr. Catherine Alberg. God bless you. Thank you so very much.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate these times once a month when we can talk.
We'll look forward to it next month. And till then, may the Lord be with you.
You too.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, I hope our listeners out there enjoy our monthly interviews with Catherine. She's really one of the most articulate people that we have, certainly in the movement today, and she loves the Lord. That's the most important thing. And this really is a spiritual battle, and those of you who have not yet seen the final countdown, the part one, part two, Pastor Billy Crone. He actually, of course, has all the scriptures there, and then he has all the video clips. We think they're very well worthwhile watching, and of course, as you know, we've interviewed Pastor Billy a number of times. We actually have them on CD. The first five are Countdown to Armageddon, Part 1. We're probably going to end up with Part 2 and Part 3. It's taken a little longer than I thought, but you can get the Countdown to Armageddon, Part 1, by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then if you'd like to see it on DVD, he does a great job, and we have it in two parts, each one with five DVDs. Part one, part two, or get the two of them together at a slightly reduced rate. But you have to be able to understand what's going on today from a political point of view, a cultural point of view, an ideological point of view. But remember, this is a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And that's the one message I want you to get. And then I want you to learn how to present what's going on today. We have a greater weapon than they have. They have the power, they have the wealth, they have the military, they have the police, they have the subterfuge, but we have God on our side, or at least we hope we are in God's side and are worthy of his blessing. And if America is going to be saved, it's going to be a great revival coming, and I want you to pray for revival. I want you to pray for revival, because if we don't have a revival, we are going to lose America. Well, certainly we want to mention some of the things that we have in addition to Pastor Billy's material. And incidentally, the telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We do carry Catherine's book, Spy Chip. We do actually have a four-tape set on Spy Chips, my interviews with four-tape or four-CD set, my interviews with people who are experts in this field. And then, of course, we have a four-DVD set put together by Pastor Billy on RFID, Pastor Billy Crone. And what's really so interesting is he's gotten all of these video clips from the people who make these RFID identification chips. And you can't believe how blatant they are about the total control and regulation and control of your mind that they hope to be able to implement by having the knowledge they're going to get by charting everything you do through RFID terminology. So that's the Pastor Billy Crone's four DVD set. We have the book, Spy Chips. We have the four tape set on Spy Chips. And then, of course, we have the four DVD set on RFID. Understand that these things are very real. We're moving towards a dictatorship. Most people are going to probably lose everything they have financially, materially. Many of us will lose our lives in this very battle, but we have to, of course, be willing to stand for righteousness, to profess our publicly our belief in Jesus Christ, because, of course, that is the most powerful weapon we have. And it does take time before you are willing to get up before an audience and say, I believe in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, and certainly for me and my family, why we will worship the Lord. Understand the spiritual nature of the battle we're involved in. Understand that the things that are happening are not by accident, they're by design. Pray for America. Pray for revival. But please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, until tomorrow at the same time, when we'll be back with you again. Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.